and welcome to the podcast to be named later here on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. He is Jerry Pugar. I am Alex Stump. Here for another weekly installment. Jerry, how's it going?
It's great, Alex, but we were humbled this week, weren't we?
I was humbled a lot by this game that I cover and allegedly know anything about.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like you know much about baseball, or at least postseason baseball, but hey,
I don't know ball.
We cover the Pirates, so once every 20 years, we get to see the playoffs.
For 3 years in a row, and then anguish
womp.
In those 3 years, but yes. So I picked the White Sox to win the World Series. That's not happening. I got burned because people who listened to this way back in, I can't remember, very end of March, will also know that my initial World Series pick was the Twins. So I just don't know ball, and I'm never picking another American League Central team to ever win another series of postseason baseball. I disavow that entire division.
That's impressive, Alex. I mean, your rivalry with the AL Central, because you just don't know them, is phenomenal.
I've covered them pretty exclusively, you know, for interleague the last 2 years.
But yes, that's them playing the Pirates. It's much different than them playing, you know,
Houston. That's fair. And my White Sox World Series pick 100% did stem from whenever I saw them in Chicago. And yes, I know they weren't going to be playing the Pirates, but they just looked damn good all the way throughout. That's like, yeah, this team, Craig Kimbrell, you know, Liam Hendricks, you're not going to score any runs on that bullpen. Well, guess what, Alex, you stupid jerk. They go and they give up, what was it, 5 runs in game 2? Game 4, they just got absolutely schlacked. It was bad. I'm done talking about my postseason picks right now, though, because we had a really exciting Game 5 of the NLDS between the Dodgers and Giants, and I think it's safe to say that was the best series of the postseason so far. That'll probably be the best series this entire postseason. It's whack that, you know, those two teams had to go up against each other so soon.
Right, and only 23 teams in the history of Major League Baseball have won 106 regular season games. Those two faced off in the DS, in the NLDS, which is wild. Obviously, the Dodgers had to win their way wild card, you know, then they get to the next round in advance. And, you know, that's kind of the crazy thing about the Major League Baseball playoff system, because, I mean, if you remember back a couple of years ago when the Pirates in the NL Central were almost they had the three best records in the league. And the 98 win team had to play the 97 win team just to get to the next round of the playoffs in a one game series. Like, so, you know, the CBA is expiring. Do you expect there to be some changes to the playoffs?
You know, the changes they want to the playoffs, like the owners have floated for a while, the 7 teams for each, so 14. And, you know, you get to pick who you play in a series, and I don't think that last one's going to happen. I don't think there's going to be an expanded postseason either. Not saying I have inside information of how, you know, the conversations between Tony Clark and Rob Manfred are going right at this very second. I just don't see the players yielding on that, and I feel like that's an issue they could probably win on. Losing battle maybe in the long run, but for right now, I think they keep the 5-team. The only change I would personally like to see is getting or changing seedings, how you determine seeds, because it is ridiculous that a team could – how many games did Atlanta win this year? 86?
Somewhere around there, yeah.
Thereabouts. They got an automatic trip to the divisional series – while the 106-win Dodgers had to duke it out. Like, that's just wrong. I don't like that. The way I would do it is, if you win the division, yes, you get a chance at a playoff. You automatically are in the playoffs, but then the seeding is based off of record. So the Dodgers with 106 wins would be the number two seed, and the Atlanta and the Cardinals would have had to duke it out in the quote unquote wild card game. Right there. It's ridiculous that the league rewards geographical location for seeding, in my opinion.
Yeah, and the Pirates are in the central of the National League, and they're not really centralized at all, to be honest with you. But I mean,
they're further east than Atlanta is.
Yeah, right.
Or Cobb County. I'm sorry.
That's right. Gotta respect the Cobb County Braves. And I mean, I think, you know, if you look at an extended or expanded playoffs, it means more money for the league. It means more revenue for the owners, more games for the players, which is the trade-off there. So I don't know that. I mean, if that, I don't know how I would expand it.
The trade-off for that, though, is a division title is inherently worth less. Because right. You're not fighting for five playoff spots, you're playing for seven. Why would you go out and sign that free agent? Why would you go and try to make that big trade at the deadline?
Let's just go back to American League pennant, National League pennant, best records. Go back to the World Series. But I think they should reseed, but I would reseed after the wild card game. Obviously, I think you do have to put a little bit of stock into winning the division, no matter how bad that division might be. I mean, the NL East was a tire fire for most of the year, and there are some divisions that are better than others. But I think what I would do is I would reseed after every round. And if you reseed after every round, I think that's fair. Because then you reseed after, let's say, the Dodgers get there. Then, hey, guess what? You know, the Braves are at the bottom. They're the four seed, right? Then they get to play San Francisco, and it just changes things. And I think, you know, you want to have a little bit of balance, but I mean, obviously with the wild card, it makes it difficult because you're the next two best teams. And the wild card, I like the one as much as like, I think I go back and forth on this pretty much every day. I like the one game playoff because I like the drama and I like the excitement of it. It's good theater. It's good baseball. It's do or die. It's everything out there for 27 outs. And I think that's what's really cool about that. So I wouldn't change that, but I would reseed after the wild card round and then finally figure that out.
Hey, we're going to take a break right now. Whenever we come back, Jared, you just got this entire second segment ready to go. Why would I introduce this interview?
Right. Take a step back, Alex. I got this from here. I sat down with John Moses, Director of Communications and Broadcasting with the Out to the Curb, and we discussed quite a bit of things, and you'll catch up what we talked about here right after this break on the Pirates podcast to be named later on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. Welcome back to the podcast to be named later. This is your host, Jared Prugar, and I'm with John Moses, Director of Communications and Broadcasting for the Altoona Curve. John, thanks as always for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Jared. When are we going to name this podcast?
Listen, we don't know when we're going to name it, but it will be named later. That's all I can tell you at this point. It's kind of secret, much like most of the things this offseason as far as moves go for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
That's fair. But I look forward to my next appearance on this podcast with a name for the podcast.
Listen, beggars can't be choosers, but I guess we're going to find that out. But John joined us on Young Bucks a while back at the beginning of the season. So we figured this is a great time to have him on. Now that the season is over. The Arizona Fall League has now begun. Now, John, you got to see O'Neill Cruz play all year. How did you see him develop, even with the injury?
I mean, I was a little surprised at how smooth he was at shortstop. I mean, you know, when you think about a guy of that size playing the position, you can't envision it because you just haven't seen it before with your own eyes, a guy at 6'7" inches tall playing the position. But He is a remarkable athlete. Just so smooth in his motions. He gets good reads. His footwork was pretty good. And he's obviously got an outstanding arm, which, you know, I think we saw more of early in the year because, you know, some of the, you know, the routine play was a little, was something he had to work on early in the year. You know, the ball that was sort of hit right at him or one step to his right or to his left where he, you know, that sort of like game speed that general manager Ben Sherrington alluded to at some point early in the year on his radio show about how, you know, the plays that you make at game speed, it takes some time to sort of get back into that rhythm. And I definitely observed that with O'Neal this year. By game 25 or game 30, I was saying to myself, you know, this guy looks like a totally fine infielder. And, you know, I think there's always going to be some conversation about him being in the outfield. You know, he never got in there in a game this year. And people see the bat as so good that they say to themselves, well, you know, you just got to get him in the lineup every day. And I understand that. But, you know, I think he made enough improvement there over the course of the season that he proved to me that he can play the position in the big leagues.
Now, speaking of O'Neal Cruz in the big leagues, he comes up and makes a real big splash on his way to the big leagues, number one. But then once he gets there, what did you see from him? That did anything really change, or how did you see that from your eyes as far as how Cruz did when he got that call?
I just think, you know, a guy with that much talent brings so much energy to all of his teammates. You know, that was something I observed when he came back from the injury in mid-late August, where, you know, the energy in the dugout was just different when he would, you know, rip off an extra base hit or hit a home run. You know, you could really see a much bigger energy across the dugout and sort of raise the level of everybody around him. You know, his first game back in the lineup, you know, Altuve scored 16 runs against Richmond. So, you know, I think it's sort of, in some ways, it, you know, let the lineup sort of get back to what it looked like normally at the beginning of the year, allowing guys to hit the positions they were used to. But also, you know, it was clear from just some of the ways that, you know, other guys on the roster would interact with his highlights after games. I mean, I can't tell you the number of times that guys like Kanan Smith-Njigba or Cal Mitchell or Brad Case or Jeff Passantino would interact with a highlight of his on Twitter being like, this guy is unbelievable. And, you know, I've been around the minors, you know, 8-10 years now. And in social media, like, you don't see players have a lot of interaction with in-game, with highlights that happen in game, you know, people, you know, players, you know, teammates saying, this is something I've never seen before, or this is something that is special. You know, guys jumping on Twitter after a game like that, I think sort of spoke to how all of his teammates recognized that he is such a special talent. And he's played Pittsburgh for a long time, as long as he keeps hitting the ball.
Now, you've seen him hit what I would imagine amounts to hundreds of home runs because you're at the ballpark early enough to see him take BP. Is there a home run that you've seen that you'll never forget from Cruz?
Well, the one in Akron. Oh my God, yeah. And the one in Bowie at the end of the year, the last weekend of the season. We were in Akron. This would have been the first week of September. So after he came back from the injury, and Altuna was just like not swinging the bats. You know, I think we lost 5 in a row in that 7-game series. And it was the final day of that series, and Cruz hit an estimated 465-foot bomb that pretty much cleared the entire ballpark in Akron. You know, so I don't know if you've been to Canal Park, but like, there's a couple rows of seating that are sort of like, you know, as part of a tiki tent of sorts. And, you know, there's tables out in right fields, you know, so there's actual seating out there. And then above that, you know, there's a flat area with their kids zone. So there's this big orange slide that, you know, kids can shoot down. It's an inflatable one. It's probably 20 feet tall. And he landed the ball on the building behind the kids zone and it bounced out of the ballpark. And, you know, it was one of those swings where, like, he hit it and everybody in the ballpark went, oh, my God. And that really stuck with me. And same with the home run in Bowie the last week of the season, because, you know, Bowie was in the thick of it. You know, they needed to beat Altoona with a miraculous eighth inning rally on the final day of the season to qualify for the playoffs. And, you know, all week it was like, Bowie needs three wins in this series, four wins in this series to get in. And, you know, Cruz hit a 3-2 pitch with two outs in the top of the ninth, like a 464-foot bomb. I mean, it was the same kind of thing. Like, he got a fastball. It was, like, right above the belt and just absolutely smoked it. So I think those two home runs will probably stick with me for a long time just because, you know, he has such incredible power. And, you know, you look at his body and you say, wow, he's tall. But you don't look at him and say, wow, he's muscular in the way that a Mason Martin is or in the way that some of these other guys are. But he's one of the strongest guys I've ever seen hit a baseball. And, you know, he doesn't look super muscular because his arms are that much longer than an average baseball player. He's an incredible talent, man. So fortunate to watch him this year.
Yeah, and I mean, he's obviously very impressive. And I'm not sure if I told this story on this podcast or anything, but it was a story that got kind of left on the cutting room floor because O'Neill, anytime I would try to talk to him this summer, obviously things just didn't go my way and it didn't line up. But I was going to put together a piece on when I threw batting practice to him in the 2019 season. It's just a different kind of ball that comes off and a different kind of sound that comes off of his bat. And they say light tower power. And honestly, this is like across the street type of power from O'Neill Cruz.
Yeah. I mean, you say light tower power, and that's because, you know, when he stands in the box, he's as tall as a light tower.
It's a different spin on it, but yes.
Yeah. He's an incredible talent. Cal Mitchell has this joke, and, you know, he shared it at the end of the year when he was at Indy, when he was asked about him by some of the media there in Indianapolis. He was like, you know, O'Neill Cruz is what happens when Kevin Durant is born in the Dominican Republic and decides to play baseball. And, you know, I hadn't heard Cal say that before, but I'm sure that's, you know, something he has joked about and thought about for years. Cause, you know, they were teammates in Bradenton at 19 and before that. But like he said that, and it was like really impactful to me. I was like, you know, he really is such a specimen of such a physical specimen that, like, you know, he could be playing basketball and he would probably be, you know, if he were born in Florida and, you know, he was playing basketball at age 9, 10, 11 years old, he'd probably be playing Division I basketball, right? Like, he might be an NBA player at 6'7" tall, right? He's just an incredible athlete.
No, and he wasn't even the only Cruz on this team. Omar Cruz, I thought, had a very good year for the curve as well.
For sure. And, you know, I really respect that transition there, Jared. That was some big league stuff.
We're on cruise control.
And it's funny that we talk about Omar now because, you know, his stature is so different from O'Neill, right? Like, Omar Cruz is listed, I think, 6 foot tall, but, you know, he's barely 6 foot tall, if he is 6 foot tall. And, you know, he's a guy that sort of got better and better as the year went on and just sort of grew into one of the most consistent arms in the Altoona rotation down the stretch of the year. You know, I love his mechanics. You know, I just sort of love that toe tap that he has going. He's got a good rhythm. You know, he's got good he's just got good vibes. And, you know, I think he's got a chance to pitch in the big leagues for a while because he throws right around 90 miles an hour and he can really spin the ball. And, you know, those guys that are left-handed that can spin the baseball, you know, those are the ones that tend to hang around.
Yeah, and if you're left-handed and you're able to do that, you're a very serviceable player. I mean, you look at some of the guys that have been around and a former Curve player, Zach Duke, I think is a perfect example. He's been around the league for what seems like forever since I was way younger than what I am now. And now he's left-handed and there is a market for that. And do you see him as more of a starter or more of a reliever at the next level?
Tough to say right now. I mean, he's still pretty young. I would say he stays as a starter in the minors. Though, you know, I wonder how much more fastball velocity is in there as he sort of grows into more physical maturity. You know, if he can add another 2 to 3 miles an hour on his average fastball, then he'll probably give himself a pretty good chance to start, because he can definitely spin that curveball. He's got feel for his slider, and the changeup, you know, is a good weapon for him against right-handers, which he's going to need if he's going to stick in a starting rotation. So I think it sort of remains to be seen. But, you know, the fact that he had success at this level, at this age, I think bodes pretty well for his future.
You're right. And that's the thing. It was somebody that young and that serviceable already. I think that just kind of transitions really well and translates really well to the next level, whether that be Triple A or even a strong spring and maybe even making the team out of camp.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's one thing that was sort of lost on Altoona this year was that, you know, the curve were playing 21 and 22 year olds at all of their significant positions in the batting order throughout the season. The league average player at Double A is 23 and a half. You know, so it's those guys that experience success against older competition at Double A are the ones that tend to stand out and have serious big league careers. So, you know, sure, Mason Martin struck out a lot. Okay. He also hit 22 home runs and then added a couple more at AAA, playing against guys that are 3 and 4 years older than him by the time the season ended. You know, same with O'Neill Cruz and Rodolfo Castro, right? Like Castro was hitting, I think, 300 with like a 350 on base percentage when he went up to the taxi squad and then eventually the active roster after the Adam Frazier trade. In, you know, 70 some odd games at Double A playing against guys that were 3 years older than him. You know, so I think that that is something that we need to remind ourselves about, that like guys that experience success against older competition at the upper levels of the minors tend to have pretty good big league careers in front of them.
No, and that's a really good point because we don't really think about it like that. We don't really kind of look at their Double A success and the quality of the competition or even the competition that they're facing at Double A because it's the minors. We don't think that that really, you know, in the grand scheme of things matters, but it does. It matters a real awful lot.
Yeah. And, you know, that's one of the beauties of Double A baseball, right? Like if you can have success at this level, then you are proving on some level that you can, that you have a skill that can do it in the big leagues. You know, that's one reason that I've been so fortunate, that I've been so happy to be at Double A for, you know, 6 or 7 years now, is that, you know, every player that, you know, an organization feels good about or thinks that has this potential to play in the big leagues, you know, they've got to prove it at Double A a little bit. And, you know, I could run down a list of guys that have hit 300 and above at Double A. And if I throw you 25 names, 20 of them play in the big leagues. And some of them are stars, you know, guys like Bo Bichette and Vlad Jr. and Aaron Judge and Gary Sanchez, right? Like, you know, the guys that can do it at Double A usually are the guys that end up with big league careers.
And that's, you know, who is, because we talked about Martin, we talk about Castro, and were you surprised by kind of their performances when they went to Triple A? I know obviously for Castro, it was the first time he's been there all year. And same thing with, and that's even with playing the majors. Were you surprised by the way that they performed at Triple A?
You know, a little bit, actually. It was always obvious from game five on that those are talented guys and that they had the ability to do it. I think the reason I was surprised is that it felt like the last 2 or 3 weeks of the Double A season that we were seeing a little bit of fatigue. Certainly felt that way when it came to Castro, because obviously he was in big league camp, which starts late February this year. And then he was at the alternate training site. He was back at, you know, played every day at Double A, and, you know, his performance down the stretch of the season, you know, it just sort of looked like he was just feeling the cumulative effect of going every day since late February. And, you know, after a year off, that's natural, right? Like that your body is going to wear down a little bit. I think that's why I felt a little surprised. It's not that I didn't think that those guys wouldn't have success there. I very much believe that guys like Castro and Martin and Mitchell, like, they're going to play in the big leagues for a long time. But, you know, it was very encouraging to see them go and experience success against much older competition at that point in the season when their body was worn down.
Now, what is the biggest difference to kind of just in general between Double A and Triple A? Because obviously there's a letter, but it's a little bit more than just that, right? It's a little like they say that they're starting to pitch now. The pitchers aren't just throwers in Double A, but what's that difference? What's the step up from Double A to Triple A?
My understanding of it is the command of secondary pitches is significantly better. You know, at Double A, if you can land your breaking ball on either side of the plate, you're probably going to have some success, assuming you can manipulate it to throw it out of the zone and then, you know, still throw your fastball for strikes. But from a hitting perspective, once you see a guy second and third and fourth time at Double A, and if they're only landing their breaking ball on, say, either the inner half or the outer half against you, you can sort of get ready for that. But I think, you know, guys at AAA can land their secondary stuff more often to both sides of the plate and to different quadrants of the strike zone. And, you know, that's an adjustment in its own right. And I think there's a lot more thinking along that hitters have to do with pitchers. So I would say that that's sort of been my observation of what I've been told, you know, when I ask executives or scouts about that kind of thing. You know, from a pitching perspective, it's probably a little bit different because you've got, you know, hitters that have smaller zones that you can take advantage of. So you have to be, you know, more fine with your command. You have to control the baseball better. And, you know, you have to be able to read your opponent's swings better in order to have more success at AAA.
So, you know, looking back on this season, who was the prospect that kind of really took you, like surprised you and really came out of the woodwork this year?
You know, there's two names that came to mind when you asked me that question. Jiwon Bae is definitely one of them. We only saw him play second base all year, but from what I understand, he is an outstanding shortstop as well. And, you know, a guy that can play both middle infield spots and run the way he can, that's a pretty good profile to start with. And then it felt like he started to grow into a little more power this year. And that's going to be key for him. You know, if he's going to be a guy that you can rely on for occasional doubles and triples and occasional home runs, in addition to the elite level speed, you know, that's going to let him hang around for quite a while. And, you know, the fact that he can play some center field also is going to make him highly valuable to any team that can keep him on the 40-man roster, because he can play three premium positions, you know, two of them pretty well at second base and short. And then, you know, as he gains more experience in center field, the fact that he can run, I think, gives him a pretty good chance to be a pretty good center fielder also. And if he, you know, continues to hit for power, that's going to be a really good sign for him. The other guy who just blew me away this year was Matt Frazier. We had a very good outfield all season long in Altoona. But when Matt showed up and was hitting for power and was playing a plus center field, I was pretty caught by that. And, you know, Frazier's a guy that, even though he's going to be a little bit older, I think, he's going to be 24 at the start of next season, or, you know, turning 24 at some point during the year next year. That's a guy who's going to play in the big leagues for a while because he can hit for power and he can play center field. And, you know, that's a really good combination for a player.
Bay was always intriguing to me because of obviously the middle infield aspect. He was predominantly a shortstop, but anytime that you can play shortstop and play second base, it's good. Now, he was a guy that ended up getting hurt early in the season. And then when he came back was when he found that power stroke. And I think that was the game changer for the rest of the year for him.
Yeah, I think so. You know, he didn't hit a professional home run until he went out on that rehab assignment in early July when he was playing in the FCL, the Florida Coast League. And then he came back to Altoona and he hit, what, five more? So I think he finished with six for the year. And, you know, he hit one home run. I want to say it was probably, I think it was late July, maybe the third or fourth week back. We played Harrisburg at the end of July. And he hit a home run to left center in Altoona, which for a left-hand batter is not easy. You know, like Mason Martin will go out there. Okay, right? He's got 80-grade power. O'Neill Cruz will go out there. Sure. You know, 80-grade power. But, like, Bay hit one to left center this year. And, you know, I remember in that moment being like, oh, my God, it's in there. Like, there's a little bit of pop in there. So, you know, like I was saying before, you know, if he can give you an occasional extra base hit, you know, that's just going to make his speed that much more valuable over the course of the season.
Right. And, you know, you brought up Matt Frazier. I think Matt Frazier is the guy that popped out for everybody this year with the season that he had in Greensboro. And then he didn't miss a beat when he came up to Double A.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he talked about this with Mike Persak of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette when he was in Greensboro about sort of the adjustment he made to try to hit the ball a little bit more out front of his body, because that, you know, is the place where he could unlock some of his power. And what's interesting is he made that adjustment after the 2019 season, right? He's drafted in the third round in 19 out of Arizona. And then after the year, you know, he sits down at Instructs and he sits down with, you know, some of the hitting coordinators and executives in player development. And they say, you know, this is an adjustment that we think will help you to some more game power. And he just never had a chance to use it, right? Like, he, you know, 2020 gets wiped out and he can't do what he learned at the end of 19, that minor adjustment. And it turned out to be big for him. So I'm a big fan of his game. You know, I think that guy's going to play in the big leagues for a while.
Where do you think he's going to start next year? Because obviously he finished in Double A. Do you think he stays in Double A, or do you think he gets bumped up to Triple A?
I would imagine he starts at Double A. He played something like 40 games, maybe just under 40 games. You know, so I would imagine that unless he has like an absolutely bananas spring training and, you know, looks incredible, I would think there's a pretty good chance he opens a Double A next year.
Now, one last thing before I let you go here, who is kind of the guy that, you know, you expect more from next year that you think kind of is on the cusp of that breakout, but really could take the next step this year, or this year coming up, I should say?
Boy, you leave the good questions for the end, huh?
Save the best for last. That's what they tell me.
You know, and this is not to slight what he did in 2021, but it feels like there is much more production to come from Kanan Smith and Jigba. You know, he had almost a 400 on base percentage for Altoona this year in about 70 games. You know, he had a leg injury here, leg injury there. But I would say that there's more production in that bat. There is more power that we didn't really see in game this year. He hit six, maybe seven home runs. And, you know, I think that since he has probably the best strike zone discipline of any player I saw at Double A this year, I think that there's a pretty good chance that he takes that step from knowing the strike zone so well to knowing when a hittable pitch is coming and taking advantage of that, because he has such a good idea of what the strike zone is and where he does the most damage. I just feel like he needs a little bit more repetition, right? Like, if you know that he just needs more games. And, you know, I think the Pirates recognized that with his injury this year by, you know, sending him to AAA for the final stretch. And now he's in Arizona doing fall league. This, you know, he just started today. You know, he just needs more repetition, but I really feel like there's more average and a little bit more power in Kanan Smith and Jigba that we haven't seen yet.
I think he's one of the most underrated guys in the trade with the Yankees to get Tyon, or to send Tyon there and to get the package they got there and or got in Pittsburgh for that. And you're right. I think he does need those repetitions. I think he needs to stay a little bit more healthy, but I think he could really start to turn some heads with a good offseason, a healthy offseason, and even with his performance in the fall league.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's key for him, right? To have a healthy offseason where he can continue to build his body. You know, he's 22 also, and you know, he's a guy with a pretty good head on his shoulders. You know, he's very well spoken. You know, he is very interested in the information. He puts in the work, from what I understand, you know, off the field in terms of preparation. And, you know, if he can, you know, if he can tighten up his body a little bit and grow into a little bit more power, then, you know, he's just another guy who's got a skill that's going to keep him in the big leagues for a while, because he has such a good idea of the strike zone and how to take advantage of it.
No, and I think that's probably one of the most important tools that you could ever have in the game of baseball, no matter what level. And that's going to play at every level as well. A guy that I thought was fun to watch this year was Trey Mago, a Johnstown native. He was the first local guy to really suit up for the Curve. But he was one of the most consistent pitchers on the mound for the Curve this year.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, he's the Altoona Curve Pitcher of the Year for a reason. And, you know, his first start in Richmond, you sort of had to squint a little bit to see what it was and who he was as a pitcher. And then his second start was his first one at home, and he just didn't throw a lot of strikes. And I was like, I'm not really that sure yet. And then I think it was his third or his fourth start where his very next one, where he threw something like 50 of his first 58 pitches for strikes. And I was like, he's going to throw a lot of strikes. And then you look at it a little bit closer and you see it's a pretty good breaking ball, and he throws 91 to 93. And the slider's pretty good. He's got feel for the changeup. He knows how to pitch. He's going to be around for a while. He's a good player. Really enjoyed having Trey this year. And, you know, goes back to a little bit like what we were talking about with Omar Cruz. You know, those guys that throw at least 90 miles an hour, they're left-handed, they throw some strikes, and they can spin the ball. Those are the guys that hang around the big leagues for a while. And, you know, Trey absolutely has that profile. And, you know, there's several scouts that I talked to this year that were saying the same thing. You know, not 100% sure that he's going to stick as a starter in the big leagues. You know, a couple scouts that I talked to this year were just sort of saying, you know, I just need to see a little bit more before I say for sure. There is the definite skill set to be there for a while. And, you know, he's a guy that I could see making something like four or five starts in AA to start next year, and then spending the rest of the year in AAA, because I think he's that good.
Right. And I think, you know, he's a guy that flew under the radar for me. I really didn't know much about him until he made that start and the first home start. And then you were right. I mean, it was just kind of like, okay, let's see what he's got. And it's early in the season, first game action for many of those minor leaguers in quite some time. The weather's still kind of iffy. And then it just kind of got consistently better over the year. And I think that's the biggest thing too, is that consistency never went away. And when you're a pitcher and you face that and you have that consistency, that's a recipe for success for a long time, if you can continue that trail of consistency.
Totally. I mean, you know, clean delivery, works quick. You know, there's a lot to like when it comes to Trey. And like I said, you know, it would not surprise me if he's a guy that shows up and pitches very well at spring training, that he may end up in the AAA rotation to start the year, depending on how, you know, the pitching sort of shakes out to start the season. But he's a guy that I can see moving pretty quickly to AAA next year.
No, and I think that's a very good point. It'll be interesting to see where a couple of these guys land, because some of them, or most of them, deserve that AAA nod, but there are only so many roster spots, both AAA, AA, and wherever else.
For sure. And, you know, I don't know the indie rotation as intimately as I knew the Altoona one this year, but I'm fairly sure that Marvel and Sulcer are both back. That they're not minor league free agents yet. Maybe Bo is, I'd have to look. But I think most of the guys that made nearly every turn in the AAA rotation, I think will be back next year. And obviously you're going to need a flex spot or two, because, you know, you'll have young guys like Yajure and Kranick sort of probably shuttling back and forth a little bit next year. You know, AAA rotations are always pretty hard to project, especially in October. You know, it's part of the fun of it. And, you know, I just, like I was saying before, you know, I think, you know, Contreras is a guy that probably opens there next year, you know, unless he has a great spring training and forces his way onto the major league roster in April. So, you know, it's nice to see some of those guys in the starting pitching area start to make some real progress, because, you know, that's a key for the next contending team in Pittsburgh.
No, that's a good point. And it's never, you know, it's never a bad thing to have too much depth or too many arms either, for that matter. But as always, I'll let you get back to your off season. We greatly appreciate you joining the podcast. Thanks to John Moses, Director of Broadcasting and Communications for the Altoona Curve. Thank you, as always, for joining the Pirates podcast to be named later. We'll catch you for this last and final segment here after this break. Welcome back to the Pirates podcast to be named later. We thank John Moses, as always, for being a great friend of the program and for joining us in the off season. Alex, it's time for the third segment, Free For All. You can go, since I started this segment.
Thanks. You know, I like these, you know, longer interviews that you do. It makes my life a lot easier. I'm not saying that I don't enjoy doing this, but, you know, I could, you know, put my feet up. I could, you know, crack a beer. You know, that's actually how we did this whole show. You know, we did the segment, and then I, you know, patiently waited for the 30 minutes. John was on, you know, the call the entire time, ready to go. You know, that's how it actually works. Not you did that beforehand and then you spliced it in there. But
yeah, there's nothing I like more than watching Alex drink while I do all of my stuff. And really just kind of take that weight off of his shoulders. I know, like, he's got a lot of hair, and that's a lot of weight to hold him down. But, you know, the biggest thing with that is, you know, it's my job. You know, I'm here to take the burden off of people. I lessen the burden on pretty much anybody and everybody that I can around the site and especially on our beat with the Pirates. I take up the minor league system. I take up pretty much whatever Alex doesn't want to do. He tells me, hey, I don't want to do this. I then have to do it.
Is that actually how this arrangement could go?
No. No, you're not getting any ideas from me, Alex. I should not have suggested that.
I need you to write 2,000 words on Yoshi Tsutsugo's future in Major League Baseball.
I will give you a play-by-play of racing Mario Kart as Yoshi.
Are you going to – do you have a Switch?
I do not have a Switch. I don't have any game. The last gaming system I have is an Xbox 360.
Okay. See, I was going to say, the Switch is getting the N64 games. It's like, that's what, you know, we should do. We could actually race on Mario Kart 64.
I think that's a great idea. My birthday
is coming up. You don't have a Switch, though.
I can always get one. It's not hard. Come on, Alex.
spoken like someone who's never... Yeah, you haven't been keeping up with Nintendo. There have been times whenever it's easier to get like a kidney than a Switch.
Well, you never know when you're going to need one of those either. But I think that's a really good idea for the offseason. Maybe that would be the third segment, is who beats who in Mario Kart 64.
People Alex just look at us playing Mario Kart 64.
And this will turn into a video podcast. We'll talk over... we'll talk Pirates baseball while we race. We'll have to clear it with the FCC, because I'm pretty sure there will be some foul language in there that will not be appropriate for minors.
No, it's me playing Mario Kart. It's going to be a hard NC-17. And if you want to listen to that hard NC-17 podcast, be sure to subscribe wherever you find fine podcasts like this one, like every other one that we have here on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. Any last words, Jared?
I'm going to go out and get a Switch as soon as I can, just so I can beat
yes.
in Mario Kart.
Yes, I'm ready for this. I'm all about this. Let's do this. For Jared Pugar, I'm Alex Stone. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk again next week.